Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Optimism Show. Today we have Jack from icebreaker.xyz. Welcome, Jack.
Hey, Chris. Happy to be here.
It's a pleasure having you here as well. Before we get into the actual details and everything in your journey of building Icebreaker and what are you exactly building there, could you give our listeners actually just a high-level picture in a few sentences of why you're building Icebreaker and what you're really looking to achieve there?
Yeah. At a high level, we're building a Web3 professional network where you can meet exceptional people. Basically, we realized, data is stuck in all of these Web2 silos. And as a result, there are a lot of things that you can't do on the internet that would be greatly enabled if our data was open and moving freely. So that was kind of the core genesis of Icebreaker. And we really believe in privacy, controlling your own data, owning your own data, a lot of the core ethos of crypto. And we're using crypto primitives to enable that in a non-financial, non-speculative manner, but really using that core cryptography sense. So more crypto, less currency, if you're thinking about cryptocurrency. So that's kind of a quick little intro about where we started, why we're doing what we're doing.
No, that's fantastic, actually. And right now, if I'm not wrong, you're primarily focused on the Farcaster audience and growing.
We are definitely focused there. We've built out a frame. We've built out a cast action, and I've been on Farcaster. It's like coming up 3 years, and it's just I kind of fell into the community there naturally because I was never really crypto Twitter, and like I wasn't very good at Twitter, and Farcaster and Warpcast felt different because it was like it was so small at the time that I could just talk about whatever, and it was like Dan Romero and Mark Andreessen, Chris Dixon, and a bunch of other like kind of crypto weirdos. But they were like talking about stuff at that time and it just really stuck. So yeah, we're focused there because, it's a really awesome audience of early adopter people that care a lot about crypto ethos in general. And obviously they're like, I mean, I could talk for a long time about the whole trajectory and those what's happened. It feels like it's been 10 years in there. But to wrap it up, yeah, we are building in the Farcaster ecosystem. We see that there's an opportunity right now. We actually just started building out the Farcaster company directory. So last week I put up a cast and using Ponder. So we got a bunch of information back about basically we just want to tie your Farcaster address to your actual company. And then the third piece of that is jobs, right? Because a lot of these companies are building really cool stuff, but they're moving too quickly to use like a proper job board. Or other things. So we're interested in that reputational element. Who's hiring and what company do they work at and the associations of that company? It's really kind of hard to find those people right now.
So you're also practically, from what I understand, you also have like some form of a identification or a passport per se that will help these people. Okay. Sort of like a digital CV at the same time.
Yeah.
Like crypto LinkedIn, but not exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's I've been saying like Web3 LinkedIn for a long time, and I've recently been reassessing if that's the right thing to say, because when you do say that, it makes somebody have a whole bunch of thoughts about like what that means. And we are building pieces of that, but LinkedIn now doesn't have to look like LinkedIn then, right? Like it 20 years ago, it's and there's like this expectation then of like what that's going to contain. And some of that information is really valuable, and we want to make like the profile. We spend a lot of time on the profile pages, and would love for that to be like your main kind of like professional resume page for crypto and Web3. And some key elements of that page are that we use EAS to allow other people to give you credentials that are either on chain and public or off chain and private. We allow you to verify ownership of a bunch of accounts. So am I actually talking to the person who's claiming to be this person? We often use this with like cold inbound telegrams or cold emails to say, hey, sure, I'd be happy to talk to you if you can prove that you actually own an account at that email domain. Like, go prove it on Icebreaker and then we'd be happy to talk with you. And a lot of the, like, feel like a lot of the time they churn out after that one.
I mean, considering like they, at that point, they already sent like 10,000 emails. This guy's asking me this.
Not gonna happen. And then what is the last piece? We have accounts, the top recommendations. And then we spend a lot of time in those credentials, and those are flexible for either memberships, contest, if you want a contest, on-chain. Like, attestations are incredibly flexible, and I think really underappreciated and misunderstood. And we're figuring out like the exact best way that we want to use them, but they're incredibly flexible and allow us to do a lot of things.
That's fantastic. But also, like, having these on-chain credentials and everything will, considering how much of a problem staffing is currently for a lot of crypto companies.
Totally.
And even when they do find someone, it ends up being like, okay, that might just was like a 2-week experience. That's it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not performing as well. Like, something like Icebreaker could really help people hire the right people, hire faster, and also build something with people that are just aligned with them and what they're doing. At least from my perspective, from what you said, that's how I...
Yeah, that's exactly right. Right. Like, so on Icebreaker, you can actually... we've built out a module. So, for example, we have Quality Builder. And I only give that out to people that I think are actually like quality builders that are building good product. And there's
a special perk, right?
What's that?
Like a special perk you get.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a credential. So the way this thing works is, since I have it, I can give it out to anybody else. And if I give it to them, they can give it out to anybody else as well. But if you go to my profile on Icebreaker and you click QBuilder, we actually moved up to the top now. So if you click that little chip, it will show you everybody that has said, I am a QBuilder. And if you flip it, there's a little like rotator arrow. So if you flip that, it will show you everybody that says, I'm a QBuilder. So this is a way that you can navigate these credentials and trust in a new way and find like and we're adding all this ordinality as well. So now I can see I'm a second degree person, or like second degree connection with this person on Icebreaker, or a second degree connection with them on Farcaster. And Chris said that they're a QBuilder and they're also a marketer. So that is somebody that I would like, since I know you and I respect your opinion, now I have new insight into this person where I had none before, right? And that's kind of like making, when we're talking about making trust visible, that's what we mean.
Yeah. That's fantastic. And one term that you mentioned previously that I'd love to touch on, actually, hyper network. And hyper-networking, like, what do you exactly mean by that? And how does it really connect in the entire Icebreaker philosophy?
Yeah. Great question. Yeah. So hyper-network to us is basically the unification of all of your other networks. And this is different from a kind of like a CRM standpoint, because these are actually live connections and represent, real accounts on those platforms. So, for example, we recently built a ZKTLS ingestion flow for LinkedIn using Reclaim protocol. So you go through this flow. Basically, LinkedIn sends the data, Reclaim packages it, and now we can put it in Icebreaker. So that is, now there are two networks in Icebreaker. There's the Icebreaker network itself that has all of, all the stuff we've built. Then it has LinkedIn as these contacts, which you can now globally search. And we also have Farcaster. So we actually have three networks right now. And, there's a lot of networks that exist, and there are a lot more that are actually coming out. And as we get all this interoperable data, those become traversable. So we're aggregating these into a hyper network structure. So it will actually kind of function as, an aggregation and let you basically see, the key piece is seeing ordinality across those networks, right? Like within Icebreaker, I can look at you and see your second degree connections from LinkedIn, for example. So it's a broader set of being able to see everybody that I know across the web because of who I'm already connected with. And this hasn't been possible because of the Web2 data silos, right? Like, this is their lifeblood, their whole business model is built around this, right? So, but we have the tools now to get around that. So that means we're going to enter this era of interoperable data that you can do really, really cool and interesting things with. And to me, kind of represents an earlier vision of what the internet should have been, could have been, and will be.
That's a strong statement. I'm completely with you there. Like, there's a lot of the data silos in general from Web2 companies, or in general from companies, are the ones that kind of halted to a certain extent the actual potential of the internet. And from what I understand from what you just said, like, Icebreaker really adds like a connectivity layer to all those platforms, so people can access all the information at the same time and connect on different platforms regardless of what the platform is or how it is operated. So you connect regardless of what is going on behind the scenes.
Right. Yeah, there's just a new way that you can, you know, the interoperability allows us to say, hey, you're already connected on Farcaster. You're not connected on LinkedIn. You're already connected on Icebreaker. Do you like, and we'll just show you that at a glance, right? And imagine that expands out into many other networks. And now it's like, we're fine with that, right? Like, go connect on LinkedIn, like go connect on Farcaster. Like, we don't have to rebuild that. And
you're not competing against LinkedIn in the end. LinkedIn is already a massive corporation. You're value to everyone.
Right. Yeah. So, and they're going to keep doing their thing. And a lot of people will, you know, there are enough people and jobs in the world for both to exist, of course. We don't need to rebuild that exactly. That graph, like really the connection graph, is what we're most interested in and who you know, because we also know that word of mouth is how everything works anyway. Like, I don't think I've got a single job because there was an element of merit, and then it was also who I knew, and it was about warm introductions, right? So we're very interested in showing you a route that you can get a warm introduction to a role, right? And that's probably, yeah, like somebody in my network probably has a warm introduction to that company or person, and I just don't know about it yet. But if we aggregate together this hyper network, now we can literally light up the path for you to be like, hey, like, you know, Chris, can you introduce me to your friend here who knows the person hiring for this role? And let you, like, I'm literally just like, you know, face, and you get a nice profile for each of them. And then now you can navigate this network in a new way.
It's like, here's your to-do list.
Right. And you augment it with all this, all the trust on top. And that gets super interesting to me.
That's actually is definitely quite interesting, because that would, at least looking at it from a perspective, as I have a lot of experience working in Web2 and fintech and different companies, it's like, even for corporate sales, like, it would make them a lot more human, which is
totally
the main reason why corporate sales are take so much longer, or are this and that and might not work out as planned, is because companies have tried to remove the human aspect.
Right.
You're just enhancing the human aspect.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's actually kind of like what I'm talking about, like that original thing that the internet missed. And it was kind of, it was the person in the machine a little bit. Like, there was no like core like identity primitive in the original web. And that's what an ETH address is, actually. Right. Or it can be like, now it could be a bot or a machine or whatever. And that's also fine. But now we have an identifier that can represent a person. And you can append a ton of metadata onto that with EAS and through Icebreaker right now.
I'm curious, like a bit of jumping topics here. How did you come up with the idea for Icebreaker?
Yeah. My co-founder approached me at the end of 2022. I think actually tomorrow is our 2-year anniversary of incorporating.
Awesome.
You know, at that. He approached me and was like, hey, I have this idea. I want to build ZK advertising. That was the original idea. That was the very original idea.
ZK advertising.
Yeah, which is still, you know, that's still like a feather in our cap that we're working toward. But so then the next 6 months we spent, we raised a small angel round to start, and then started running prototypes. And we thought we were going to be able to just pay people you know, to see ads, right? We're like, cool. Like, you are a, you're an Amex Black Card holder, whatever. Prove that in ZK. And then we will go to brands and be like, hey, do you want to reach this person and like offer them something? And we'll like pay them for that or whatever. And we found that basically, you know, a lot of people behave irrationally, and they will do, like, as soon as you put a price on something, they're like, nah, is it worth my time? Like, I don't know.
Immediately calculating, okay, this is how.
Right. You're like, is this worth it? And then like the ZK stuff at that time wasn't where it is now. So it was like really, really heavy. And like, and we found that they just, you really can't, you know, just pay somebody outright to do something, but they will do something for free for something that they love, or like they'll do like silly things, like watch advertisements in mobile games because it's their favorite game and they don't want to, you know, they have the money to buy the pack, but they would, are like, it feels better to get it for free. So it's all this kind of irrational psychology. So we found that, and we went through all these experiments, and then we actually, you know, we were going to events, and this was in the bear market at the time in 2023. And we're like, okay, anybody who's going to a crypto event right now is somebody that we want to be talking to and part of this network. And then we were experiencing all of this pain with Telegram, where you don't have, like, you lose context with people. You forget what they do. You have like one weirdo random picture. So, that's actually kind of where we started. Like, okay, we have this, profile, like we've built out this like beginning of what is actually, you know, the format and the structure is pretty much the same as what we have today, but we skinned it up and added a ton of functionality. And so we built out these profiles, and then we realized, okay, how do we exchange these IRL? And that's, we actually made physical cards. I should have brought my card for the stream, but it's upstairs. And so we brought 50 cards to the first FarCon in Boston, and that was like our first alpha release. And we gave those out, and there was this game where if you made 12 connections, like, we built this dynamic NFT that basically built up, and if you completed it, then it animated.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, so that's where we had started, and you know, basically kept experimenting through the rest of the year last year up into ETH Denver, and then had been seeing on-chain LinkedIn for a while, and we're still doing kind of these like NFT advertising-ish quest things, and it was like conflicting. So really decided that we're going to lean into this, like, into jobs, companies, and people. And that's kind of been, that's really where we started to properly build out this hyper network concept and structure. So yeah.
Oh, that's an excellent, actually, story of exploration at the same time, and pivoting to the next thing that is actually more aligned with what we're trying to build, and the finding the path to move forward. I'm really curious on that point when it comes to, because you are faced with some challenges even early on, like people acting irrationally, they don't want to be paid, and all kinds of those things. I know a lot of founders in general, they get blocked when something like that happens. Or it's like, we have to keep on pushing, this will work. I'm really curious to hear from you, like, how do you, first of all, when getting to a challenge like that, how do you decide, okay, we might have to consider pivoting a bit and exploring this new thing? Like, what is your thought process behind that? And what is your advice to others that when they should decide to pivot or slightly shift?
I mean, I definitely, like, you just like kind of feel it, right? Like, you know, and I wouldn't say that we like full pivoted by any means, but there's this, like, you want to be like the deepest person in the fractal a little bit. Like, you're just like, you know, once you go down far enough and you just like keep opening doors, you're like, I don't know where this is going to go. Let's find out. And it's like, okay, no, that one didn't work. We're going over here. You just start to see things that other people aren't seeing, right? And that's because you're in a different headspace, and you've tried different things and learned a bunch. And it's like just being willing to stay curious, keep learning, and like just get up again. I think it's all of the startup stuff you read, it's just perseverance, right? Notion was, you know, I think they took money from their mom, and that was like their last shot. You know, Slack as well, 5 years, and then like, you know, they were building a game, and then they built their company, or you know, they had built this chat engine that was actually way better, and you know, a lot of people in startups just luck into it. You just have to keep hitting it. You're just run it again. And like, I think we've built, it's hard, right? Because sometimes it's like, when do you cut out this entire thing? Like, this is no longer working, right? And we did that. We didn't explicitly do it, but we did it with NFTs because we thought, okay, Dan and I both love NFTs. So we're like, okay, we're going to exchange these NFTs and you're going to build this whole dynamic little quest system. And people were like, I don't give a shit. Like, you know, they're just like, I don't care about this, especially developers. If you're talking to developers, like, they're like, why in the world would anybody want this? Right. And there are, and on the other side, you have like art and collectors and Web3 people. But I found in general, engineers are like, why in the world would anybody ever do this? This is so stupid. And they're also not big networkers, right? Like the networker people are like more in the middle and are like, okay, yeah. But really what I'm trying to do is make a sale or hire somebody or save myself time or make myself money. And like, that's as simple as it is. Like, does your product do those things? Yes, no. Keep going. And like, does it work? Does it do that for you? Like, what is the actual value that it's bringing to somebody's life? And if you can get a glimpse of that or get a hint of it, even for yourself, that is like a great feeling. And it's like addicting because you're like, oh, wow, I want to keep going here. And then, you know, that kind of like wears off and you're like, okay, actually, this wasn't that great, but there was a nugget in there that was really good. And let's like, that was the door we should take. So, you know, just exploring.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It's just to keep on exploring, keep on testing. And as you said, like there is a nugget there, even if it's like, okay, that's not the door we should follow, but there is a nugget there to take and continue on the journey.
Yeah. There's like, I mean, there's
so many breadcrumbs and continue.
Yeah. There's just so many variables at any given time. You're like, was it the wrong time? Was, you know, was the product not right? Was the UX not right? Was there a bug? Why are we having that bug? Like, you know, there's a million things. And it's like, which reason was it that it didn't work? Or was the core idea bad? Like, if the core idea is good, then it's just execution. But you could also be like executing really well on an idea that just doesn't bring value and nobody cares about. Right. And that's kind of, like, you can see that with like Pump.fun is kind of an example of that, I guess, where like, I wouldn't say that is like an incredible UI or UX or anything, but it definitely like they hit on a market that was ready to be served.
They hit on a market that was ready to be served. And the other thing is also, when you see it from another perspective, I would assume it's a business run by like three people.
Yeah.
Look at the UI, UX and everything.
Yeah.
But it's a massive company. It's a very massive company.
Right.
So it's in that sense, like I agree with you, like sometimes it just hits off.
Right.
And so oftentimes, like what I heard also is like oftentimes tying to the thing that you said about the breadcrumbs and the golden nuggets is like sometimes companies are way earlier than the trend would happen. Like Polymark.
Right.
Polymarket has existed for what, 4 years now, 5 years?
Right. Totally.
No one has known about Polymarket until a few months ago.
Right. Yeah. I mean, timing in the market is huge. Which I think we're in the right place for interoperable data. Like that's coming online. And Dan had the foresight to see that coming with advances in ZK at a time where I was still like, I have zero knowledge about zero knowledge. Like, what is that? You know, he really had the vision on that one. So, and I think that's one of our strong suits as well, is his technical prowess and his ability to kind of see into the future. And everybody, this is a popular Farcaster topic, is like, how far in the future do you live, right? Like, if you're living 5 years in the future, then you're not going to build a good product for today. Or you could, but like, you're building too far. Like, you have to meet people right now today, and like, kind of skating to where that puck is, like getting your product to that place where people are going to be, they don't know that they're going yet, is challenging, but also the fun of it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. But in the end, you cannot say like, okay, the future is going to look like this. People are going to be interested like this about this. Well, what I was, especially when we are on the right now aspect, like, what are the main things that you're focusing on Icebreaker right now? And like, love to hear like your high level, how you're doing them and how you're planning on achieving it.
Yeah. Right. So, we basically run weekly sprints, and we have been sprinting against this core hyper network build out, right? Which is getting all three networks together, playing together nicely, and making sense, because colliding those networks is hard, actually. It's like really challenging.
It's a lot of data. So,
namely in like, how do we handle what happens to connection requests when I already am connected on LinkedIn, but and I follow on Farcast, but we're not connected on Icebreaker. Like, how do we say that you're a first degree connection? Do we say you're not connected at all because you're not connected on Icebreaker? Like, there's a bunch of these basically questions you have in a matrix of like, you know, whatever, 3x3 or more. I'm literally designing this right now. I'm like designing it out. I think it's going to end up being 5x5. Yeah. So there's like 25 iterations of whatever like the profile page can look like, depending on which networks are at play on a profile. And as we add more networks, that just is going to continue to add complexity. But that is what we are deep in now. And we've been moving into a new data architecture that's going to help support that. Search for us is really important as well. So our search is getting really good. Our backend engineer, Alan, just made a really awesome update this week that our searches are going to be like sub-second now, which is awesome across a much larger data set than they had been. And we also, before that, we had built out a bunch of search stuff. And then going into the new year, for me, we'll be building out, we already support companies and, but we don't yet support jobs. So I designed out jobs recently. So we'll be having like, we'll actually have a dedicated jobs page. Not that we are going to like let you submit and stuff probably, but we will ingest those from a lot of other sources. And then, like I said earlier, we're going to show you that trust route to that job if one exists for you across all of your, across your hyper network.
Actually, that trust route would be beneficial for at least as a, like from a super connector perspective and like a networker, like that would be super helpful on one side. On the people searching for jobs, but also for the companies as well, as you get job referrals. You don't have to rely on those crazy AI prompts and vetting mechanisms and whatnot that a lot of Web2 companies actually use. And actually get a real good employee. And on the other side, what I wanted to ask you, like, are there any use cases that you envision to have, to either have or have right now? Or let me rephrase that question much better. Like, what are people using Icebreaker the most for right now?
Yeah, we see a lot of searches. We were talking to a friend, a user yesterday who said, what was it? It was my criteria that I always come and check Icebreaker for is, can I search engineer and find somebody that I would like to interview or be connected with? And that's their criteria. Which is like, that's pretty on point. I use it frequently myself to look at Farcaster users. Like I like to, we have a cast action so you can do it right in the feed and see what credentials does this person have. Profile pages, you know, people are building out their profile pages. People are recommending others. That's like kind of the main way right now. And then also using it, we've seen some communities start to use it as verification. Like you need to have your verified profile. We also are using, we actually have an integration with Modbot, which is open source Farcaster channel moderator. So you can use any Icebreaker credential as your membership gating. So we've seen, adoption of that as well. But I would expect over the next few months, hopefully that, with the improvements to search and the hyper network, search will be probably one of the core functions. Yeah.
Fantastic. And especially like with this specific set of data that you have and specific functions, like the opportunities there are limitless. I'm going to jump topic here a bit and go more to the founder side of the company.
Sure.
I just want to ask you, like, specifically when, because right now, especially, we're seeing like a more influx of new founders, new builders on Farcaster in the first place, but also all aboard crypto. And personally, I think it's going to increase exponentially in the coming year or two, especially as more professionals come in that are just looking for jobs or just transitioning from a different space, especially as the entire crypto space is growing. So my question there is like, What are your top lessons that you learned during this past 2 years, almost exactly 2 years, of building Icebreaker, and like some of the mistakes you wish you could have avoided, or like what could have been done there? And along those lines, that could things along those lines that would be beneficial eventually for new founders and founders that just started building their company?
I mean, yeah, at a brand new stage, like, team is everything. It's like team and idea. That's kind of it. I think I'm really happy with the team that we've assembled at Icebreaker. Like, we have really world-class people and talent. Also, yeah, so that was a big one for me. It is a roller coaster. You know, you have days where you're like, this is the best, smartest thing I've ever done, and days where you're like, wow, is this ever going to work? Or even in the same day, that'll happen, you know, back and forth. I've been back to back in user interviews where the first user interview is like, nah, this is like so dumb. Like, this is never going to work. And then the next person is like, this is the best thing I've ever seen. You know, and you're like, your head spins. And it's for the same feature even sometimes. So that's a big one. I read a ton of, I read all the classic startup books. Those were helpful-ish. But like, you know, you don't know until you're going through it.
You're over here, you're entering a much crazier space for a start.
Yeah. Yeah.
Much
yeah.
Faster pace.
Yeah. I think something that, one that I really like is that startups are tiny planes. Like, a lot of people are cagey about their ideas and stuff. And it's like, dude, if either of us wins, that's good. You know, it can be, and it also in Web3, it can be interoperable. And it should be. And there are new games to be played. There's new value to be made, which is a big reason we're here. I'm here. So, yeah, you don't have to be like super worried about people, you know, stealing your idea or whatever. Like, you can operate in like a positive sum behavior and manner, and not worry about it so much. Because, like, even if you put three different people, like two teams of three in different rooms, they're going to come up and you told them the exact same idea, they're going to build something different, right? Like, it's, and that's why the team part matters, right? Like, here's the idea, go build, and you're going to get two totally different things, right? So now just do that at a company level. Every single one is going to come up with something different, even on the same idea.
Yeah, that's true. Because in the end, it's the idea, and then we keep on adding things, removing things
right.
that we think are right or wrong.
Right. Yeah. So that was not obvious to me. Kind of when I was starting out.
That's a very cool point, though. Like, especially when it comes to starting up and like just go experiment and see what comes out, and then experiment again and again and never stop back.
Yeah. 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 Pretty much. Yeah.
That's an excellent point. Jack, is there anything else that I should have asked you up until now that maybe I've missed and you'd like to share?
I don't think so. I think we covered it pretty well. Yeah, I mean, if you want to, oh, here you go. Here's a shill. If you want to run your, if you want to ingest your LinkedIn network to Icebreaker, reach out. Let me know. It's icbk.me/j4ck.eth. That's my profile on Icebreaker. So yeah, I mean, we'd love to get people ingesting. Right now, it's gated by the QBuilder credential. So get that credential, and then you can go through that flow and liberate your LinkedIn contacts out into the web.
Yeah. So that's some good advice over there. I'll start doing that.
Yeah, we'll have to get you doing it. Yeah,
everyone wants to insert their LinkedIn network. Just contact Jack, and we'll put the actual link of both of your Farcaster, and we can put the Icebreaker as well, so people can contact you directly.
Yep. Perfect.
Jack, thank you for sharing all these insights. It was a pleasure having you here today.
Thanks, Chris.